I just hope that Mick Renhuizen in the technological world of Zoom is Zooming with us today. Mick, are you there?
I am present.
Excellent. One of these times you're going to give me that 3-second pause of nothing just to make me make me fall out of my chair. And you should. That's good. That keeps me on my toes. So that's always fun. Now, Mick, we always start the program off with a little golf talk, and the pros this week are in Houston. A municipal track is returned to the PGA Tour schedule. It's Memorial Park outside of downtown Houston. You can see the skyline in the background when these guys are playing. But that means 1 week from today, Mick, the ball will be in the air at the Masters. And I know that sounds very weird to say here in October. No, it's November, Glass. Here in November. So, yes, the times are very strange. And we'll have a Masters pick from Mick Renhuizen next Thursday. That's exciting.
Very exciting. I'm glad they're playing it. It's going to be weird to have no fans, no patrons, I should say. At Augusta National. I'm still glad they're playing the tournament, of course, but the experience will be much different for the players, much different for the viewing audience, but we're still playing a major, and it's Augusta National, and I'm sure it'll look pristine like it always does, albeit some of the flowering azaleas might look a little different in November than they would in April, but nonetheless, I'll bet there'll be flowers there because I know how hard they make an effort to make things look just absolutely spectacular on Masters grounds.
Yeah, I think they're having a bake sale this week, Mick, to get the funds for that too. So they've got plenty of cash to make sure it does look just how they would like it to look. And speaking of looks, I'm watching the golf from Houston in the background. They have fans at Memorial Park in Houston. I don't know how many, but we know the World Series was played there with the Dodgers and Tampa, and they had fans in the stands for that. I'm looking at our Corona dashboard today, Mick. 4,462 new positive cases in the state of Indiana. The seven-day rate is now 17% for unique individuals. The cumulative rate is 11%. That is, as Tom Carnegie would once say, a new track record. We don't want to be setting records, but locally, Mick, we talked to Chuck Carney yesterday. Seems like we're hanging on pretty well here in Monroe County. I know we sometimes are an oasis in the state of Indiana for different reasons, and it seems like in COVID that could be the case as well.
You know, our mask compliance is really good here, and I've watched some of the national news media when I'm not watching election results and wondering, you know, some of those things as we all are waiting on pins and needles for the final outcomes of the presidential race. I have noticed that some of the news coverage is shown in counties in various states where there is no required mask regulations, but some counties, mayors like Bloomington's mayor or the county like our county health department, have enforced some mask regulations. And by enforced, I mean they've imposed them. They're obviously voluntary. Nobody's out writing tickets. That those counties within a state that may have a high COVID percentage are doing much better. So it's as simple as now it's data driven and proven. Wear a mask, physically distance, wash your hands, and you can really kind of manage the spread of the disease. And why we aren't all doing that when you see the evidence of the difference where you do have those mask recommendations and requirements, if you will, versus the places that don't wear them at the same level, don't comply as well, it's just a mystery to me. So we would just prolong all of the challenges that come with it. The hospitalizations, we're seeing an increase in the number of people that are hospitalized in our state for this and around the country. We're right back to where we were, if not worse, in the early stages of this. At least they know how to treat it better. But who wants to be in a hospital being treated for COVID if you don't have to be by simply doing these basic preventative things that we know work? So I just wish we could get past whatever it is that is causing people not to comply with a pretty simple thing that's just been proven to work. Here locally, again, I'm going to brag on mostly our population is doing well. What's coming up this weekend that could cause a potential problem? The same thing that happened 2 weeks ago. We're going to play a ranked team, and we're ranked higher than Michigan for the first time since 1987. I suspect if we would win, there would be another little celebratory, spontaneous outbreak like we had 2 weeks ago. If you're going to go outside, just wear a mask and stay apart from each other and celebrate that way. Scream in the street, scream in front of your house, whatever you want to do.
Scream into your mask
on somebody else, right? You know, just be respectful of that. because we don't need those things happening as we enter a period of time where the winter and more indoor activity, and we're going to be forced to stay close to each other inside when that period of time comes and our weather changes. And we don't have to be going through this with difficulty. Again, locally, people are doing pretty well. Just keep it up. And let's hope that others comply in their respective areas where they're not now, and we're seeing the outcome of that.
And we can see on the dashboard for the state, it is turning orange like a sunset. But all around us is not bad. Brown County to the east, not bad. Green County to the west, not bad. Owen County. But you can feel it tightening. It seems like it's tightening. So let's keep holding out and being smart with this. Deputy Mayor Mick Renhuizen is our guest this afternoon. Keith, we've got plenty to do, and we'll have some trivia down the road as well. So don't worry, we'll take our lumps at some point.
Well, Mick, we've got a big ribbon cutting coming up on Monday, and this is something that's been talked about around here for some time.
We do. It's at the 5th and 3rd Street and Adams intersection. This is over by the Rose Hill Cemetery. As you go west on Kirkwood, don't you love Bloomington? Kirkwood is 5th Street. 5th Street turns into 3rd Street, and 3rd Street collides with Adams Street over at that intersection around the cemetery. And, you know, that's an awkward turn and has been. And there's some traffic lanes that converge both ways. And so if you're in two lanes going for a while, you end up in one lane. So that's been reconfigured a bit. You can't take the almost 90-degree turn out of that intersection, of course, because of the right-of-way we don't have to do that. But we also have a community that we've noticed, and you can see the implications of this if you would have noticed before the improvements that are happening over there. There was a well-worn footpath near the cemetery where there's a bus stop. That wasn't, you know, there was nothing there for people to walk on when there was inclement weather, snow, ice, rain. And so we did what the university has learned a long time ago. Wherever people walk is where you put sidewalks. And so, you know, we're fixing that part of that intersection so that it's more pedestrian friendly and user friendly for BT, but Bloomington Transit riders. We also know there's bike riders that use that as a pathway to get across to the other bike infrastructure on West 3rd Street that now takes you over I-69 and across the western side of our city and our county. So we've made that sort of a difficult place to traverse on a bike or pedestrian pathway, much better for both. And at the same time, we've reconfigured some of the lanes so it's not so difficult for you to zip in and get into the correct lane that you need to if you're in your car. So we're going to celebrate all those improvements next Monday, November 9th at 2:00. If you've got a bike and you wanted to experiment on this first of the many, I think we'll have in the future, protected bike lanes, which have curbs and ways to keep bike cyclists separated physically from a car, as well as some tree plot there that makes it a little bit more aesthetically pleasing and softens the asphalt look and everything. This will be a chance for you to try it out if you haven't discovered it already, or if you're a pedestrian using the bus stop, you'll see that improvement. And if you're a car, you'll also understand how those changes have hopefully made it a little easier for you to zip into the correct lane to make the appropriate movement you need to at the intersection at 5th, 3rd, and Adams.
We're speaking with the deputy.
Can't
mayor
move the cemetery, can you, Keith?
No, you can't.
No, it stays right there, and you gotta work around that. You should have had a bank sponsor that, Mick. I can't think which bank it would be, but you should have had a bank. Should have had a bank right there. Maybe they'll bring the big gold scissors. Where do you store those anyhow? Is that in Hamilton's desk, or where do those
go? I used to have one at Parks. It was wooden, of course.
Mick, while you're talking about that, we've got Veterans Day coming up. What's the city's plans with respect to that?
We don't have anything formally planned. It's a city holiday. We obviously respect and honor all of the veterans that served our community.
Yeah, we can't get together and gather and do anything, Keith. Yeah.
But we can't really physically, honor them in a way that we might do on another year other than 2020. So can't give you any plans of anything specific. I think there is a 5K run that you can do on your own that honors Veterans Day that you might check with Bloomington City Parks about, because I believe that one's kind of do it on your own instead of, we don't want 1,000 people running together in a normally 5K type of scenario. So that's just a do it on your own and report it back out type of an event this year.
Let me ask you another question. People looked at the HT. There was a letter to the editor in the HT from someone that went to Switchyard Park looking for a playground for little kids. And, you know, I'm sure the city read that. For the benefit of the people that saw it, they were looking for a playground, you know, swings and all that stuff. So can you respond to what it is and what they were talking about there?
Absolutely. So I noticed the entrances that they suggested that they looked at and couldn't find the playground. And oh, you were so close. If you're listening, you were in the right area. When you were on the west side Rogers Street entrance and you walked by the pavilion and you walked towards the splash pad, which is turned off now. And if you'd have just looked to your south, you'd have seen this massive playground. Now, it's a little different looking than most playgrounds in that the swing sets and the slides and so forth are embedded a little bit more into the topography there. There's some created height for some of the climbing walls, but it's a little bit different looking playground, and maybe it was easy to overlook if you haven't seen one like this before. But trust me, it's a fantastic playground. It's got features unlike most of our other parks, but it still has swing sets and soft surface areas for kids of all ages and climbing walls, which we don't have at every playground, and slides. So all those elements are there. You were really close. You just didn't quite turn the right direction. And I get it, it's a big park. It's a 68.
Well, the other
park.
Thing, too, is, Mick, when you pull in there and then you have that big pavilion, if you park over by that pavilion, you have to walk
you
around
it. You wouldn't
have seen it. Yeah, you have to get around. You got to get around the pavilion to know where it's at. So the other thing people need to be reminded as well, that the Walnut Street side is open, the Rogers side is open, and the Grimes side is open, but you can't get to one of those from the other. There is no throughway, perhaps like Central Park or something like that. You go in one way and you go out the same way, so there are no car traffic, which was, I think, a brilliant design.
You're correct in all those things. That was intentional. It gives access to neighborhoods or vehicular traffic from three different directions. There's actually a fourth parking lot. If you wanted to come in on the rail trail parking lot to the south, you could park there and walk up the
Good
B-line
point.
And you'd see the dog park first, and then you'd see the playground. And by the way, the B-line has signage about all the features in the park on it. So if you're looking up on or around the B-line and you're in the park, it should tell you skate park this way, pavilion this way, stage this way. So, you know, again, people are getting used to a long linear park, and it's not as easily readily available to see some of the features unless you're in it.
And Mick, you're old enough, Keith is old enough, and I am old enough to remember the old license plate, Wander, Indiana.
That's
well,
right.
You can wander Switchyard Park, 57 acres, plenty to see, plenty to do. And as you mentioned, if you don't get out and wander a little bit, you might not see the basketball courts and the pickleball courts and the gardens down at the south side or the north side and then the trails that go the other direction. So it is fun. The dog park's on the far south side as well. Our family's used it a ton. And it's a great pass-through, too, if you're just getting into town from that side. So enjoy it. Get out there and again, explore it. That's what makes it fun, Keith.
Well, and what I wanted to bring up, Mick, on this is exactly your response that people read that haven't been there yet and say, well, they don't have any place for kids to do anything. And I thought, that can't be right. I haven't seen it myself, but I knew there was
Keith.
More stuff there. Well, I don't go on the swings and slides anymore.
You can walk by it.
Yeah, well, walk. What?
That's the whole thing.
Yeah, it does have some unique features. Most people are most likely aware of their features of their neighborhood park, what's nearest to you that you use on a regular basis. This is not a so-called quote-unquote neighborhood park. It is a regional park, so it's a destination. That doesn't mean people who live around it don't use it as their neighborhood park. It just means some features were designed to be unique only to a park like this one, or in very few parks in our system. There are over 35 parks in our system, so not everyone has the same features. This one has unique features like bocce ball courts, pickleball courts, gardens. Those are in some other parks, but not everywhere. There's no other park that has bocce ball courts, for example, or a big stage where we can have performances for thousands of people when COVID passes. We'll do that, or a splash pad. So there are some unique features here, and then there are the traditional things you would expect to see, like a playground, albeit one I described that looks different than your neighborhood park. Obviously, grassy spaces for people to congregate on, blankets and so forth. So it's a combination of those things, but it also had to take into account the topography that we had, and so therefore had to be stretched out linearly as opposed to put in like Bryant Park, which is a big square.
Mick, in your former life when you were Parks and Rec director, this time of year, you were out talking to people about bringing softball tournaments into the Bloomington area. With COVID, is any of that kind of stuff happening anywhere?
You know, Keith, the group that we affiliate with the Parks Department and still do, the national governing body of sport of softball, is called USA Softball. It used to be called ASA, or the Amateur Softball Association. And they almost entirely suspended national tournaments. There's usually 105 tournaments this year. Sites that felt comfortable and their state governors would allow them to have events had them. But I want to say a handful of them happened. Bloomington would have had one like we normally do this year, but opted to wait, appropriately so. And you're allowed to suspend it for a year and keep the one that you had in 2020 for 2021. So that's what Bloomington did. And we've also already been successful at getting one for 2022. The national meeting, I can't believe you can remember, this is the exact time of year we would have gone. It usually happens this week or over Veterans Day week. And that's been suspended because obviously conventions like that with thousands of people are not being held. And so they're having Zoom meetings of the various committees, and they'll be awarding tournaments for two years from this year and beyond at that event. And so Bloomington will be bidding again on some of those events. But yeah, you can expect that hopefully to return again next year when COVID hopefully is a distant memory from all of our history.
Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington, joins us every Thursday just after 4:05. We catch up on everything that's making news in the city of Bloomington. And a big thing that's going to start next week, Mick, is the leaf collection program. I know we've been talking about this on and off with you and Adam Wason here for the last few weeks to get people prepared for it. It starts Monday. What do we need to know? And where is the best place online to find all that great information if people want to follow along?
Yeah, it's pretty easy website to find out where to follow along. Bloomington.in.gov/leaves, LEAVES, V as in Victor. And that's where you can find your interactive map to see if, when your zone is being picked up. That's when you can find out where the trucks are in terms of where they are in your particular part of the mapping area, so that you can hurriedly rake out your leaves to the curb. Not in the curb, mind you, near the curb, but not in the curb. But remember, we're trying to keep the leaves out of the street, out of the gutters in the street, and out of the storm inlets in the street. So so the changes this year are the interactive map has a bit more real-time information on it that should help you. We've made a concerted effort based on our innovation director's outreach through a group of city employees that participated in a Bloomberg philanthropy project that's helping us engage with residents and how to make the leafing program work more efficiently than it has in the past, more affordably for us, more efficiently for everyone. So some of those practices are being tried out in a pilot program that 22 households have volunteered to do this year. And that pilot program basically asks, at their suggestions, mind you, this was done with a cohort of our residents who said they thought this was the best avenue to try. They're going to mulch their leaves. They're going to mow over them with a mulch mower. They're going to leave it on their lawn as fertilizer to help them out next year when their grass starts growing. And any excess material they're going to rake and put in a provided city 64-gallon container that the city will pick up instead of having to bring the leaf vacuum out, which obviously uses a lot of fuel and a lot of person power. And it's not the most efficient way to do this. So we're trying to find a better way to do it. And we appreciate the 22 households that are participating in our pilot program. So go to bloomington.in.gov/leaves and know that this only goes till December 24th this year. If you have questions, call 349-3448, and we'll be anxious to see and we'll report out to you all and your audience the results of the pilot program when it concludes later in December.
So there you have it, folks. And we're just trying to find a better, less expensive, more environmentally friendly way of picking up leaves. You can always bag them up yourselves. You can always take them, and there's plenty of places around town that'll help you out and get them out. If you can't wait and you don't want to deal with it, well, that's fine. We need to have some options and deal with all of that. Mick Renheisen is our guest. He joins us on Thursdays, and every Thursday we try to prolong this discussion as to not get into the trivia part of the presentation, but it is time for trivia, Keith, and I think if I remember correctly, and I know Mick has a mind like a steel trap, we've been pretty good over the last month, and it just, at some point, we're going to miss a couple shots here. We're going to turn the ball over. We're not going to have a good week of practice. It's
our national ranking has been marvelous.
Has been. We've been climbing up the charts.
Yeah, we're in the top 20 now.
So let me find my crayon, Mick, and we will get started. It's trivia time with the world famous that we have not met, Celeste.
Yeah.
And I can only, well, she didn't give us Halloween trivia on Halloween, so I have absolutely no clue what the theme of this week's trivia will be. Keith, do you have anything that's just randomly rolling around in that massive brain of yours?
70-degree days.
Oh, all right. All right. Well, that's good. Mick, what is our focus this week?
Well, your focus is going to be on an old city facility that has been or will be returned to the city.
And the John Waldron Arts Center.
That's right. In its previous life, the John Waldron Arts Center has existed in a variety of uses. And so what we will be doing with the help of our two recently named co-chairs for the Waldron Recommendation Committee, Valerie Pena, who many of you know from her longtime service as the Visit Bloomington director and has been working over at the university in the Office of Governmental Relations and Economic Engagement. She, along with Maya Michelson, a former city arts director in economic and sustainable development, but now the Indiana Arts Commission leader. Those two chairs will be leading a discussion about how best to reuse the Waldron Arts Center in the future. So they will start that work fairly quickly. They'll be assembling some other additional members to their committee. And that's what the discussion today with your trivia questions is about, not Valerie and Maya, mind you, but rather the Waldron Arts Center.
I know that Valerie is a big Oklahoma Sooners fan. That was my ace up my sleeve if we needed to go there. But it sounds like that's not going to be the case. Okay, Keith, are you ready?
Fire department, police department, courts. I'm ready.
Okay. I don't know what that means.
Already laying down some potential answers.
Well, I think that what are they going to say? What did it used to be?
Well, it used to be City Hall.
That's courts were there too.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So here you go. Question number one. What is the architectural style of the Waldron Center, which contains influences from the French neoclassic movement, the Gothic and Renaissance architecture? So you thought it was going to be something simple.
Here sure.
Uh-huh. Is it A, Art Deco, B, Brutalist, C, Beaux-Arts, or D, Bauhaus? Which I may be mispronouncing.
Well, B-A-U-H-A-U-S. I can't believe it's Art Deco. Brutalist, I have no idea what that is. What are the other two?
Beaux-Arts or Bauhaus?
I'm going to go with Bauhaus. I don't know what I'm talking about. It's not Beaux-Arts.
My microphone's broken, and my headset's not.
You can't hear me, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, I can hear you. I just can't hear Celeste. See, that's the problem. Uh-huh. That's the problem.
And your answer?
Beaux-Arts.
And that's what it is. Beaux-Arts is named after the school it was originally taught at in Paris. So it's a Beaux-Arts.
Is that with an X in it?
Architecturally influenced. B-E-A-U-X. You know, there was a Beaux-Arts trio that you probably heard of, Keith, in your days at IU class. Maybe you did too. Yep. So Beaux-Arts architectural style is the Waldron Center's architectural influence.
You know I went with that, Keith?
Why?
It was C.
Oh,
see, it was C. That's right.
Well, I can now tell all my friends is that building over there is Beaux-Arts.
You want to know where a Brutalist building exists?
Yes. What is it? Yes.
When I tell you where it is and you can drive by it next time, you'll go, oh, that's a brutal-looking building. So I know why they named it Brutalist Architecture. So the hospital site, you know, where the core building is, KOHR, on the corner of First and Rogers, on the southeastern side of the hospital site, go right across the street, and there's an L-shaped building on the next block south. It would still be on Rogers. Next time you look at it, it's about four stories high.
Yeah.
And you now realize it's Brutalist, you'll understand why they call it a Brutalist.
Okay. I think I know the building you mean, too. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Question number two. The building, Waldron, that is, originally functioned as Bloomington City Hall. Keith, I already put that out there. When did it stop being used as Bloomington City Hall? Was it A, 1941, B, 1965, C, 1978, or D, 1991?
I'm going to go with 65. 78's too recent. Although, wait a second, 78?
Where did it move after? That's the question you need to answer.
Well, it would have been, yeah, that's right.
Where did it go after
it left
there? I'm going
to go 78 from 65. 78 for me.
When did it open again? 50 what?
That wasn't part of the question.
Yeah. No, they're just, 50 was one of the dates that it moved.
41, 65, 78, or 91. When did it stop being used as Bloomington City Hall?
I'm going to go with 78.
Okay, you both picked 78. The answer is 1965.
Which was C, which I was stupid not to
go. Well, and I said that at first. Darn it.
Mick, where
you
did
you talked yourself out of it.
I know, I went with Keith. Well, because where did it go after the Waldron Art Center?
City Hall?
After Waldron.
Did it move to Showers?
Station? It moved to 3rd Street.
Police station. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's why I was trying to, if you could go back that way, I thought we'd catch it that way. And I obviously wasn't around in 19, I was three. I was just moving around in some other places, just not here.
Let me know what C is for next time, because Mike's got something going there.
We were brewing with C.
So just a little more information about the Waldron. It was constructed, or it began construction in 1915. So it served for 50 years as City's Hall.
That's fantastic.
It was the police department. It was a fire station, too, for a while.
Yep, it was all those things. And that's your next question. What was the building used for in this sequence? Immediately after City Hall moved to a new location, what was it used for? Was it A, Election Central, B, the Bloomington Fire Department, C, the Bloomington Animal Shelter, or D, the Bloomington Police Department?
So when it left
in 65.
When City Hall left in 65, what took over?
That's the question.
For it. And as Keith accurately mentioned, what was C again?
Bloomington Animal Shelter.
I don't think that.
It's got to be.
What makes the most sense, Keith?
The fire station was there, and so was the. Well, wait a second. No, the police department was. Okay, the police department moved when the city hall moved. Okay.
So everything shifted.
I'm going to say fire department.
I think that fire bay there, our friends at WFHB, that's our clue, and that's what we're going with.
It's actually the police department.
Ah, great. Was police department C?
No. Police department was D.
That makes me feel better.
So it served as City Hall for 50 years, then the police department, then the fire department, then it turned into this arts use.
So the fire department left before the police department did?
They did, right. Yeah, they did.
Everybody
used
that.
New station over on 4th Street?
Well, that would have been one of them. I'll have to go back and ask our fire chief. You know, we have five fire stations, firehouses, so I'm not sure. This would have served the district downtown.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which one, but probably the one on 4th Street, but I'll verify that.
Well, you have the one on Rogers, too, or had the one on Rogers.
That's right, which was now the Lotus Arts office. So the police department moved again. So this is 65. The police moved into the old City Hall, which is the Waldron Arts Center now. And then in 85, they moved again, the police department. So they resided in the Waldron for 20 years before moving. And
where was the police department before Waldron?
I don't have an answer to that one. I'll have to ask my historian in the
take
police
that, Celeste.
Yeah, Celeste.
So that's a Celeste
there,
office.
So there. Yeah.
You do know that you guys take the quiz every week. She doesn't.
That's
right?
Exactly. Well, right. That's good. That's
she's
good
the teacher,
historical.
You're the students.
Yeah, what was the significance, Mick, at that time of 3rd Street, if you have that answer? Why did we choose 3rd Street? We didn't want to. The county owns the square. Is that? The courthouse
I think
was
two reasons, Mike. Okay. I think you're right about one of those. The county courthouse has always been, you know, that location for the county courthouse on the square. But, you know, a densely populated urban center needs fire protection and police protection, and residents need to get to those services for administrative purposes too, in an area where it's easy for them to access that. So, you know, to this day, our police department's downtown, City Hall is downtown, and one of our fire stations is downtown. So that really hasn't changed in well over 100 plus years.
Let me give you a Celeste trivia question. Do you know why county buildings are where they are in each county?
Which kind of county buildings are you talking about?
Like the county courthouse, that kind of thing? The old one.
This has something to do with latitude and longitude.
No. It has to do with they were set up so that it was a one-day ride from any other part of the county via horse to get to it. Seriously.
Well, that makes total sense.
One day's horseback ride.
The difficulty of movement back in the era where you know, our basic forms of government were set up, you had to think of things like that. Mm-hmm.
Breeders' Cup this weekend, Mick. Hopefully you get your horse tips from Smitty. He'll help you out there with everything else.
I have a funny, quick little reminiscing thought. You mentioned it at the beginning of your show. You were talking about going down to Castle and North. So I was on the broadcast with Joe when the miracle in Paradise happened. You know, that's been a reference for decades now when South on the final kickoff and final play of the game. And I was doing color with Joe at the time. I mean, this had to be 35 or more years ago. You guys will know from the date that the game occurred. And all I remember was that was shortly after the Stanford band play happened.
Right.
So I was screaming on the microphone, "It's the California play. That's the California play." And sure enough, Brad Jackson's weaving through all these people who had come out, the band and other people who had come out thinking the game was over. As a sports official, Keith and I shared that pastime together in that era. Actually, I watched for the officials, and not a one of them was, you know, crossing their arms to stop the clock. They were running alongside Brad Jackson. So that told me it was a live play and no whistle had occurred. And sure enough, that was the final play.
That video is amazing, Mick, when you look at it. Jeez.
And thanks
the TV stations had cut off. They thought the game was over, so they left the game. And I know Joe and I were, like, stunned. We were the only people still on the air that were covering it. Everybody else had, like, cut the game off quickly to go to commercial before they were going to come back and do their post-game interviews, and we didn't.
Why would you? Well, that doesn't make sense. But anyhow, and thanks to Rutgers for running that play last weekend as well. It did not count. Unlike the miracle in what was it called again?
Miracle in Paradise. Paradise is where Castle High School is located in a little burg outside of
Newburg.
Yeah.
Icebergs, Newburgs.
So there you go. A little history there.
Michigan, Indiana, Mick, you'll be in the box on Saturday afternoon. Well, right at afternoon, 12:03 kickoff on Fox Sports 1. Hoosiers 3.5-point dogs, totals 54. Well, there's only been one of these victories here in the last 40 years. You've been around for a couple of the games there at Memorial Stadium. Any inside information for the listening audience on Saturday?
I saw the last victory over Michigan from the press box, and all I can recall about that was raining, and Bo Schembechler, who was coaching, actually ran out onto the field and told the sports officials, the referees, "It's too loud. Tell the fans to quiet down. My players can't hear my signals."
Wow. And I said,
"You got to be kidding me. 50,000 people. We play in the big house. There's 100,000. And did they ever quiet down when Indiana wanted to run a play?" I could not believe that. That is a true story. Fortunately, Indiana won that game 14-7 in a rainstorm. And I'm hoping we have another victory this weekend. I really like the way our kids are playing.
Great job as always, Mick. Tell Celeste thank you. We appreciate her torturing us every Thursday just around 4:30, and we appreciate your insights for everything. Go Hoosiers. And when we get back together next Thursday, let's hope we're 3-0, and we'll have your Masters pick. We'll have the Masters on in the background. Ooh, exciting times here in November.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Mick.